the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
I have Chris McConnell. He's the editor of GovCentral.com. It's a monster community, and Monster.com has a contract for USA Jobs. So they're very much so involved in the federal job market in terms of running USA Jobs, but they also have a site called GovCentral.com, which is a site that provides information to job seekers, and it also has a social community. And maybe Chris will talk about that as we kind of close the show out about some of the features that GovCentral.com has for the either the federal job seeker or the, or either some other government agencies as well. Right, Chris?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me here today,
thank
Derek.
You for joining me.
Of course.
Hey, let's talk about the Sammys.
So last night was the Service to America Medal Awards, which is put on by the Partnership for Public Service. And this is a nonprofit organization that's at American University in Washington, D.C. And their whole goal is to promote federal service and public service throughout the country and sort of get those really talented individuals to want to commit to helping out their communities.
Right.
On Wednesday night was the Service to America Awards. It was at the Mellon Auditorium in downtown D.C. And they had over 32 nominees that made the finals, and then they presented awards to five finalists in a variety of categories, from scientists to law enforcement to a federal employee of the year.
Outstanding. You had a chance to sit down. You were backstage because Monster was one of the sponsors for this. You were backstage and had a chance to sit down with each one of these Sammy winners. I know we've had some on the shows, but I think that you probably got a closer up perspective on them. And you asked them three. What was the three questions that you asked?
Yeah. So the questions I asked to all the award winners was how they got their start in public service, what advice they would give people that wanted to start a career in public service, and also what sort of skills that they found that made them really good at their jobs, or that their coworkers that made them very good at their jobs.
What were you finding? Were you getting kind of a mixed bag of answers? Were you getting kind of the same answer over and over again? I mean, give me some insight on what people were telling you.
Yeah, one of the things that was very common throughout all the answers was their passion for helping people in their communities and across the nation. Whether it was someone by the name of Pius Banis, who is the Federal Employee of the Year, and he worked for Immigration and Customs in Haiti. And so during the big earthquake in January of this year, he was able to create this sped up process for adoption. So there are all these families in the United States that were going through the adoption process and wanted to be able to bring children that needed needed homes in Haiti to the United States. And during this absolute terrible crisis, they're able to get over 1,100 children placed in families in the United States. Typically, they only get around 4,000 in a full year. So to do that in just a week period was extraordinary.
Wow, that's phenomenal. And when he, this the federal, you know, employee of the year, when you asked him the three questions, I mean, what did he say?
Yeah, he's a really interesting story. He went to law school at NYU. And I asked him, why didn't you just go to a law firm somewhere? He's like, no. I really wanted to get involved and deal with this immigration issue and help people that wanted to become U.S. citizens have that opportunity. And it just, you could tell that the passion.
Was this something kind of a lifelong passion for him? I mean, did he have kind of an immigrant background? I mean, what were you seeing from him?
I think he did have an immigrant background. He had a heavy African accent.
Sure.
But it was just really interesting that there were also family members were there that were families that adopted children from Haiti. And he was just glowing seeing these children that were safe and sound and were going to have really an opportunity to succeed in life. One of the things in the other questions I asked him was, what advice that he had for people that wanting to start a career in public service. And he was just like, be passionate about it. This is such a fulfilling job that you can really see the impact that you have on other people's lives.
Really? How did he say he got his start? I mean, you say he kind of went to school and then he just kind of went in through one of the agencies?
Yeah, it seemed that when he said that after he graduated from law school, he immediately got involved in, I guess, whatever the predecessor to Immigration and Customs was.
Sure. And then from there, he just kind of worked himself up. Was he one of the people who kind kind of maybe had like kind of the language skills? I mean, I know he was the field office director in Haiti. Did he have some of those kind of skill sets to kind of really get on the ground and work with the people, understand?
Yeah, some of the I think the big skills that he talked about was being able to have really good people skills.
Okay.
Because this is a person that is who, you know, earns a living based on of tax money, right? So he is responsible to the citizens. And so you really have to be able to be patient and a good people person to deal with someone that may not quite understand the rules and regulations and just providing really excellent customer service to people. And he also said you have to be really, really passionate about your position. Sometimes people might get frustrated with government because there are all these rules and regulations for things. And the reason why there are so many rules and regulations is to make sure that there's consistency in it and that the same type of thing happens in New Mexico or Haiti or in Michigan, that we're treating people fairly across the country.
With a lot of the federal employees you talk to and you kind of, you know, were getting a sense, and it sounds like passion is one of the kind of overarching themes that you kind of got from each one of these people. Would you also say that many of these people kind of came into the federal government kind of more entry-level positions, or they all came in a lot of different ways?
Yes, some of them did. I know that Susan Solomon, who is a scientist for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, she's been with there for pretty much her entire career.
Okay.
And she started working on studies around how chlorofluorocarbons, CFCs, those things that were in like aerosol cans, how that was destroying the atmosphere.
Okay.
And then she also started working on this big climate panel from the United Nations about how sort of are the way that we're burning fossil fuels and all that are affecting the environment for the long term, and that we really need to change our ways if we really want to be able to save our environment. And she's been in this her whole career and has slowly climbed the ranks. And this is something where she's just so proud that she can help solve these problems for the American people.
You know, a lot of people, and I mean, maybe over the past couple of years, you're getting this kind of, sometimes you get this, and it happens a lot of time, you have this negative press about kind of federal workers and, you know, federal workers wasting government dollars and the lazy federal worker or things like that. I mean, you got a different sense last night of a different kind of not even different kind of federal worker, but the federal worker at his best. I mean, what would you say would you say what you saw last night counters the complete theme of sometimes this kind of government that, you know, we're spending too many tax dollars, we're wasting money, you know, these federal, you know, workers are not kind of, you know, using the time wisely?
Well, I think that we absolutely get what we pay for. And if citizens want good functioning government, then that's something that we need to be able to source and to fund that properly. There was a recent study that just was released on Thursday by the Economic Policy Institute, where this doctor from Rutgers University named Jeffrey Keefe, he looked at salary data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and was able to compare like public salaries versus private sector salaries, and was able to control things versus age and education, experience. And one of the things he found was that, you know, public sector employees are actually paid a little bit less, you know, job to job. It's you have a big lawyer that works for some downtown law firm that's, you know, pulling over six figures a year, and
right.
And someone that works for the Department of Justice isn't going to be making that.
Sure. But, and we're talking about high six figures.
Yeah,
we're talking about like $200,000 to $300,000.
Yeah.
Well, you will never probably make that within the federal government.
No, not as a lawyer for the Department of Justice or something. But also at the same hand is that one of the big misconceptions is that there are just more white-collar workers, people with advanced education that have at least a college degree. There's about over 50% of government employees at the federal, state, and local level have a post-college education. I'm sorry, a college education, an undergraduate degree, where in the private sector, that's in like around 34-35%.
Okay.
So you just have much less maintenance workers and people like that, and just a lot more like accountants and scientists and that.
Right.
So getting back to your question about were these people last night the creme de la creme of federal government service? Absolutely. But there are also millions or hundreds of thousands of people more throughout this country that work just as hard as they do every day.
Outstanding. You know, with that being the case, I mean, what were some of the other stories that really kind of hit you, you know, as you were kind of talking with a lot of these federal workers?
One of my favorite stories was this woman by the name of Sandra K. Brooks, who works for the U.S. Department of Navy. And her job seems to be like straight out of the movies. She, with her team, basically like is like a submarine hunter for drug traffickers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So she has all this crazy technology.
So this is something that we would see on a Jerry Bruckheimer movie. Or
yeah,
something
seriously,
like that, right?
So she and her team have all this advanced technology and work with federal, with the military and DEA and all these other federal agencies to search and interdict these drug traffickers that are bringing in illegal drugs into the United States.
And we've been seeing this in the media lately about these drug traffickers are now kind of developing their own submarine fleet.
Yeah.
And they're kind of, you know, they're getting just as high tech as our military in terms of trying to bring these drugs over.
Yeah, absolutely. The one of the, she told the story in her acceptance speech last night about finding this 19-ton concrete submarine that they called Bigfoot.
Wow.
Because they didn't know if they would, they thought it was a myth that,
okay,
that these people from Central and South America that are drug traffickers could ever build something so sophisticated.
So everybody heard the rumor, but nobody believed
it
at first.
And they found, I think when they found it, it was carrying 9.2 metric tons of drugs or illegal cargo, which is amazing, right?
Yeah.
And so this woman was just a hoot. She was very, Thad Allen, the commander of the BP response was the person that presented this award to her. And she was like giving him a really hard time and just, she was just such a joy to talk to. She was a really big character and really proud of the work that she did.
Outstanding. Chris McConnell, he's the editor of GovCentral.com. He was at the SAMMY Award on Wednesday night and he had a chance to speak to every single SAMMY Award winner and ask them three questions about how they got into government service and what were some of their favorite things about the work they do. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
If you can't communicate effectively, you can't get the job done. That's why government agencies turn to Avaya Government Solutions and Quest. Unified communication solutions from Avaya and Quest increase employee productivity, improve customer service, and cut costs by integrating multiple forms of communications across multi-vendor networks. Faster, more efficient, at a lower cost. The future of unified communications has arrived. Learn more at avayagov.com/GSA2010.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem.
Hi, may I take your order this evening? Ow.
If you said server down, you are correct. Quest Security Solutions can help you keep your agency network up and running. And by developing extensive continuity plans, we can keep your data secure. To learn more about Quest Security Solutions, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Okay, people, let's settle in. We've got a lot of slides to get through on our server utilization strategy. Okay, now this is an interesting
slide. Well, you've been here before. Somewhere in your agency, someone came up with a plan for data center efficiency.
Well, if you look here at the third bullet point, this is...
Actually, what they came up with is a presentation deck. You know, with underlined sections, bullet points, few animations, and sound effects. What's missing, of course, is how the job will actually get done. Because when the federal CIO says data center efficiency is a top priority, you need more than a slideshow. You need results. That's where Dell Services comes in. We've got over 30 years of experience delivering comprehensive best-in-breed solutions, whether that's virtualization, cloud computing, or business continuity. We're ready to listen, and we're ready to help you deliver. To learn more, go to Dell.com/deliver now.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
Next year, you'll have two agencies to go to for help with cybersecurity exercises. Here's Nicole Dean, Deputy Director of the National Cybersecurity Division of the Homeland Security Department.
In FY11, DHS was funded specifically within NCSD to develop our own capabilities similar to the Red Team, Blue Team capabilities that NSA has.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Service to America Medals Awards were given out on Wednesday, and Gov Central, a monster community, was backstage interviewing each of the winners. And I have Chris McConnell. Before the break, Chris, we were talking about this submarine hunter.
The woman's name is Sandra Brooks, and she works for the U.S. Department of Navy. And then she's also the chief innovation and technology officer for this multi-agency task force. Okay. So she works with the Coast Guard and our military and also with foreign governments in their sort of anti-drug trafficking efforts.
Wow.
And she's really the glue that pulls it all together and has this crazy armada of technology to be able to hunt these submarines and prevent, you know, these drug traffickers from bringing in illegal drugs to the United States.
So what I'm hearing is that what we see in a movie sometimes may be real.
Yeah, absolutely.
you were mentioning somebody else who you really were kind of taken by.
Yeah, one of the woman that just touched me so much was this woman by the name of Jamie Constance. She works for the Federal Bureau of Investigations, and what she works for is she where this Sandy woman was doing drug trafficking. Jamie is really passionate about finding these horrible people that are doing sex trafficking of like young children, right? This is horrible. And
human trafficking, sex exploitation, all these things.
Mm-hmm. And just she's a really quiet woman, but just hearing her story was amazing. You know, in the news today, you hear about Craigslist.org shutting down their adult services website, and you know, was alleged that there was a lot of just, you know, illegal trafficking going on for prostitution, whatnot. You know, Jamie was really focusing on children as young as 13 that are either kidnapped or fall or are runaways. They fall out of the foster care program and sort of turn to the sex trade and become enslaved in this. And she was able to, with other FBI agents and other local and state law enforcement agencies across the country, to create this database of exploited children. And so that would help field agents in Utah or Arkansas be able to reference this database and see if a pimp or a woman being exploited was being moved across county lines or state lines, right? So whenever there was a big raid, they could reference this database and see and sort of connect the dots. And when I was talking to her, she was really quiet, and she said that she knew from a young age that she wanted to get involved with the Federal Bureau of Investigations. She grew up in Florida, went to college at George Mason in Northern Virginia, and knew immediately she wanted to be in the FBI. And she's had the opportunity to be promoted to other positions, but this is just her passion, and this is something that she just wants to do for
so
the rest of her
career.
So
she's even turned down some of these kind of promotions, maybe at a headquarters position or something like that, in order to kind of focus in on kind of the human trafficking, the exploitation of children, mm-hmm. sex exploitation, and everything else.
Yeah, it's a really powerful story, and you can just tell. I was asking her, what advice do you have for people? And she's just like, just find something that you're really passionate about, and you are going to be successful at your job.
And it sounds like, I mean, with a lot of these SAMI winners is that they knew from either a young age or something, maybe either they saw something that really caught their attention about a federal agency or something like that, but when they went to school with kind of maybe government service in their mind.
Yeah, some of them did, and there's this one person where he never really expected that he would be working for the federal government. His name is Shane Kelly, and he works for the Social Security Administration. After, in college, he went to a job fair and applied for a job at the Social Security Administration and got an interview, and he was kind of didn't know what to expect, and he came in, there was this big panel of people, he had like an all-day interview, and he got the job.
Okay.
One of the cool things about how he won his award was, in very rural and poor areas of the United States, it's very hard for these individuals that qualify for benefits for disability or for the Social Security Administration to be able to receive them, and especially on Indian reservations. Mm-hmm. So before he started, there was this pilot program to allow video link-ups between a SSA processing office and a like library on a Indian on a Native American reservation, like in areas that are very desolate in South Dakota or elsewhere. So he really was able to expand this program and run it throughout the country, and was able to increase applications for qualified beneficiaries by 80%. So these are people that, you know, are just living in poverty and need these benefits but don't know how to get them. And he was able to find a way to the way that they talked about it was instead of having citizens find government, this is a way for government to find citizens and give them what they needed.
Right. You know, in a time and age where, and I'm not trying to get into the political dynamic of it, but in the political fray, everybody's saying government, you know, is overspending. You know, I mean, given, and I'm kind of maybe trying to ask you this on your own kind of take after you heard some of these stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, did you feel like, you know, government is overspending, or do you feel like, you know, that money is, that is being spent wisely and these government employees are being innovators and trying to really help people?
I absolutely think that we always hear stories about wasteful government, but for these individuals, they're really trying to serve their government well and save taxpayers' money and really do an excellent job. In many cases, if we could replicate these people across the country, we'd have a much more efficient government. But at the same time, a part of the reason why we're running such big deficits is we have this dichotomy between what government obligations we already have to spend on programs, and there's, you know, fights in Congress about taxes where we're just running deficits and we're not really getting to the issue of being able to balance that ledger.
Right.
I don't know how to answer that question, but I know that we're just kicking the can down the road and we're not really trying to address it.
Who else really took, I mean, we got a few minutes before we go to the next segment. Who else kind of really struck you as somebody who was really, really powerful story?
One of the is sort of being a little bit more topical and talking about the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan was this woman named Terry Glass, who works for the Army Medical Support Systems Team, which is a part of the U.S. Army Medical Material Development Activity. Really long name, right? So she was a 20-year veteran, a non-commissioned officer, that after she retired, she was a program manager for this Army Medical System. And basically, she created what was known as a casualty evacuation kit. And this is this, think about it as like the size of a suitcase, and it's like an ambulance in a suitcase. So you could have it, you would have soldiers in the field doing patrols in a Humvee or an MRAP. It's this big vehicle that prevents IEDs,
exactly.
You know that.
Sure.
And if there was a casualty, they could bust open this suitcase and be able to administer first aid immediately. And people in the battle theater were just astounded about how many soldiers they're able to save by this, especially within that very first critical hour. And so her whole team was there, and they were just so happy about being recognized for the efforts that they were doing about making sure that the soldiers that are fighting for our freedom over in Iraq and Afghanistan are, if they get injured, that they're able to survive and make it back to the United States safely.
Were a lot of, and I've been to the SAMU Awards many times, were a lot of these individuals really touched and humbled by, you know, the awards they were receiving? Did they feel, you know, I don't deserve this? I mean, what was the kind of the mood last, you know, on this past Wednesday?
It's great that you asked this question while we're talking about Terry Glass, because while she was giving her acceptance speech, she didn't think that her and her team deserved it, especially compared to the other nominees, that there were so many other deserving people that work for our government that were recognized but didn't receive the award. So she recognized that she was very grateful that her team was being recognized, but that there are all these other people as well that are doing just an amazing job within
right.
the federal service.
The kind of the quiet heroes that
yes.
are out there.
And, absolutely.
And it sounds like it's many. I know that there are many out there. You know, the one thing that strikes me is that you've got these agencies that many people don't hear about. I mean, everybody hears about FBI mm-hmm. and everybody hears about this, but you don't hear about Army Medical Material Development Activity. You know, it's like who would even know this existed, but this gives a chance to find out these smaller sub-agencies, smaller sub-offices who are doing this kind of amazing work that people never hear about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have, it's not everything you always see on CSI, on CBS or something like that. There are a lot of federal agencies across the country that are very small, but contribute to really touching people's lives in a lot of different ways.
Talking to Chris McConnell. He's the editor of GovCentral.com. It's a website that's part of the Monster community. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Internet. It's indispensable. Without it, how else would we perform crucial functions like shoe shopping, watching videos of a cat playing the piano, emailing inspirational anecdotes to our 1,000 closest friends, But despite these awesome utilizations of information technology at Kaiser Permanente, we've found some better uses, like being able to securely manage your own health online 24/7, emailing your doctor's office, checking most test results, reviewing meds, making routine appointments, not to mention a vital digital connection between you, your doctor, and everyone on your team. Could it be that making total health smarter, more efficient, and more convenient is the very sort of thing for which the internet was intended? Maybe, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't fit in a cat video now and then. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we want you to live well, laugh well, and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Without an effective estate plan, your hard-earned wealth will end up in the hands of the government, and a will is no protection. At Zell Law, our estate planning lawyers take the time to listen and understand you and your goals and figure out what you want to achieve. Then we work with you to create a customized estate plan that helps you and your family realize your dreams of wealth and freedom. Find out how we do this by joining me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
What is the Federal Aviation Administration's information technology strategy? How is the FAA enhancing its IT governance and program management? And what about FAA's Next Generation Initiative? Join host Michael Keegan next week as he explores these and other questions with Dave Bowen, Assistant Administrator for Information Services and Chief Information Officer at the Federal Aviation Administration. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. City, state, and local governments, they are suffering right now. Job losses projected to approach 500,000. And there's a report that came out from the National League of Cities that has really discussing the unemployment situation, the job loss situation within these government agencies. I have with me in the studio Chris McConnell. He's editor of GovCentral.com. It's a monster community. And Monster.com also runs the USA Jobs website for the federal government. But Chris, you've been monitoring this issue. Talk to me about what this report is talking about.
Yeah, so the National League of Cities is this nonprofit association based in Washington, D.C. that represents local and municipal government. So think like your Montgomery County executive is a municipal government, or the city of Washington, D.C., or Salt Lake City, Utah, you know, places like that. And they really focus on issues that affect local and municipal governments, obviously. So within that organization, there's this guy by the name of Chris Haney that runs a research shop within there that looks at the fiscal conditions of all these cities. And what's interesting in learning about this issue is that the cities that when they receive tax revenues from their citizens, it's on this really big delay of about 12 to 18 months. So think about when, if you own a house and you get your property assessed in December of one year, you're not in, let's say, December of 2009, you have to pay your tax bill by April of 2010, but the city doesn't receive that money until 2011. So now while people are nationwide, we're having economic problems and unemployment still a little high, and the economy slowly recovering, but not at the pace that we want, that these cities are receiving more and more diminished revenues. So these local governments aren't able to carry a deficit from year to year. They have to have a balanced budget within their city charters. That means that they either have to severely cut back services, raise taxes, or fire people. And unfortunately, that's been happening across the country already, that you hear about teachers getting laid off. But thankfully, President Obama and Congress were able to extend some relief to help keep some teachers in their jobs for at least another year. But eventually the check's going to come, and either the fiscal conditions will improve or people are going to be losing their jobs.
Well, you know, you just mentioned about the president, and they passed the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Is this money, the ARRA, is any of this money, has this been able to help some of these city, state, and local county agencies?
So one of the big things that the stimulus bill, the ARRA bill that passed, was that really went towards infrastructure jobs. So helping to fix our roads, rebuild bridges, and really invest in longer term projects. That's going to help us in the long run. But there was money to help local governments keep their firefighters, you know, working and keep police officers patrolling the street. But even then, that was a short term fix, and it wasn't going to be able to to stem the tide long term.
So we're talking about a situation where, you know, like you say, you put the Band-Aid on it. You may have maybe allowed maybe two or three police officers not to lose their job, where it may have been 10 or so. I mean, you may have allowed certain situations to not just completely become a disaster, and you save some of these jobs within these agencies.
Yeah, it's a really unfortunate situation. The National League of Cities and other, you know, big cities like the U.S. Conference of Mayors. There's also like the counties organization, and all these other organizations are lobbying Congress to be able to pass more help to keep these people in their jobs, because these are critical services. I mean, we're not talking about like some random city government. These are critical that help things function. It's like, the tangible effects are, it's just going to take longer when someone gets robbed for a police officer to show up and issue a report. Or if someone calls in a fire, there might not be a fire department that's open, because like in Detroit, it's horrible. They've had to do rolling, they're called brownouts, where these fire departments are just not staffed and they're just sitting idle and not able to respond to calls.
It's funny you mentioned Detroit, because that's where I'm originally from, is Detroit, Michigan. And I've seen the effects of, you know, a lack of city services. So Detroit has a situation where you're losing the population.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And you're losing the tax revenue base.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, this is happening in a lot of places across the country. For example, in Kitsap County, which is in Washington, it's west of the city of Seattle. Their transportation, it's called Kitsap Transit. They've had to either do furloughs, where people are just told to take every other Friday off, had to do reduction in hours and service. And there's, I was talking to someone that worked for Kitsap Transit, and they were really, really fearful of their jobs. They think that the worst is over, but at the same time, you know, if we continue to have this very slow recovery, there could be further reductions or layoffs.
And so, like you mentioned police and fire, but we're also talking about maybe medical services, talking about social services, we're talking about sanitary services.
Yeah.
We're talking about services across the board, right?
Yeah, anything. Your trash is going to get picked up as quickly. You are going to have a longer wait in line at the DMV. If you have a city-funded hospital and you have an emergency, it might take longer for you to get through the emergency room. The survey that Chris Haney at the National League of Cities done, they've been doing it since the 90s. And what they've been doing is they've been interviewing city managers and other like mayors or county executives to kind of look at what they think the state of their economy is. And basically, these people are saying that the worst is still to come because of this tax revenue, sort of delayed tax revenue that we're talking about, that it'll take up to 12 to 18 months for people that once they pay their taxes to that money actually being used to help fund city services. So we might see the national economic picture improve long before we see local and municipal governments position improve.
I'm looking at these numbers right now from various cities, and Flint, Michigan, you know, 23 firefighters eliminated. You know, we're looking at Portland, Oregon, 120, you know, teaching positions eliminated, looking at 300 workers in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina. The numbers are kind of startling, where I'm looking at Fresno, California, 160 positions, people being laid off. If this is the case, and you know, we're talking about maybe the economy may have stabilized and we're not going to go into, you know,
a double dip recession,
and hopefully it has stabilized. But if this is the case, if these positions are eliminated, are we going to see them come back at some period of time? I mean, what's the survey saying? What are we seeing with the numbers?
Yeah, it's from what I've been able to read and understand, it's some positions will be able to be refunded and rehired very quickly, but others, they're going to be permanent reductions. And so some people might say that's a good thing, because those were wasteful services that the citizens didn't really want. And in that case, then, yeah, sure, it's okay that we created a more efficient government. But for your core city services like fire, police, and education, you know, these are really, really critical positions.
With that being a case right there, are we at a point where these cities and these counties have completely shut off hiring?
There is still hiring, but it's at a much reduced level. For example, you look at the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which is this U.S. government agency that sort of compiles the number. And whenever you hear about the unemployment rate going up or down, the Bureau of Labor Statistics is the organization that crunches the numbers. There still is hiring at local and the state level, but it's at a reduced level. And there, but at this point, there's more layoffs. There's more people being discharged from their jobs. So if you're starting, if you're looking to start a career in government, you're going to, it's, there's going to just be a lot of competition. So there are jobs out there and you can find them, but you're just going to have to really fight for it.
We're talking to Chris McConnell. He's editor of GovCentral.com. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Human Capital Solutions Report, provided by Aon Consulting.
What separates the best agencies from the rest is leadership. Successful agencies proactively identify, assess, develop, and retain leadership talent. Through Aon's leadership assessment and development programs, senior executives usually improve within 8 months, increasing leadership ratings by nearly 20%. Aon pinpoints specific attributes leaders need, and with assessments, role plays, and coaching, provides immediate feedback needed to grow.
Aon Consulting partners with leading employers worldwide to turn strategies into success. With its vast federal and commercial experience, Aon Consulting provides solutions and best practices to help your agency be more efficient, improve delivery, and achieve its goals. With new leadership and new missions, federal agencies need support now more than ever. By engaging its national network of unmatched talent, innovation, and operational excellence, Aon Consulting delivers distinct value to its clients.
To learn more, visit aonfederal.com. That's aonfederal.com.
You're an agent of change, making changes for the better in the face of shrinking budgets and expanding expectations. Amplify your agency's possibilities with unified communication solutions from Verizon that enable you to securely and reliably work where you work best, at a kitchen table or an office abroad. Change your team into a dynamic, interactive 24/7 think tank with our collaboration solutions and BlackBerry Bold smartphones, and transform smaller budgets into bigger successes. So while demands are rising and funds are declining, you can address both with powerful, global mobile voice and data solutions from Verizon. Find out how you can make your teams even more powerful and effective at verizonwireless.com/gov or by calling 1-800-293-3048. Verizon. Rule the air.
And now, today's Terrorist Prevention Series, brought to you by the Metropolitan Police Department.
The ninth anniversary of the 9/11 attacks in the rearview mirror, and the countdown towards 10 underway. Americans may still be concerned about terrorism, but only a few of them label it as the top problem facing the country. A Gallup poll conducted a month before the September 11th attacks in 2001 said that 46% of Americans believed terrorism was the nation's most important problem. A recent poll says only 1% of Americans now label terrorism as the top problem.
Recognizing and being able to describe suspicious activity is the first step in terrorism prevention. That's why the Metropolitan Police Department created Operation TIP as an easy-to-use, reliable, and confidential way for businesses and other organizations to share potentially important information with law enforcement. Be the eyes and ears of our nation's capital and report suspicious activities to Operation TIP at 202-727-9099. That's 202-727-9099 or text 50411, because preventing terrorism is everybody's business.
Today's mobile apps report is provided by Akamai, powering a better internet.
In a recent FedTech magazine article, FAA Air Traffic Organization CIO Steve Cooper says the ability to let users tap into data and transactional apps on smartphones or other truly mobile platforms is very appealing. Mobile apps passed the FAA sniff test for an emerging technology that's ready for the next step. That sniff test? Can we use the capability to provide a new service that we couldn't provide before or to make a service better?
Imagine a future when a mobile device accesses a web page that automatically adapts to serve an optimized mobile experience tailored for that device. No more unreadable web pages, just simple, elegantly delivered functionality. Be a part of that future now with mobile optimization from Akamai. Akamai's content adaptation engine streamlines the mobile user experience, allowing you to effectively engage more users. Visit akamai.com. Akamai, powering a better internet.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just join us, we've been having an interesting conversation about job losses that are projected at approaching 500,000 at various city, state, local, county agencies across America. These job losses are because of the tax revenues are decreasing. Many of these government agencies do not have the economic base to continue to pay workers and have to lay people off. They're probably having to complete cut services down, and whether whether it be police services, mental health services, social services, maintenance, sanitary services. Government agencies are suffering across the nation. I have with me Chris McConnell. He's editor of GovCentral.com. It's a monster community, and Monster runs USA Jobs, the federal job site that many people go to find federal jobs. He's been monitoring what's going on at these agencies on a local level. Chris, you know, we were just talking over the break about, you know, this used to be a time period where people would go to a city job, they would get into state government, they would get into a county government, federal worker, and they would always say, you know what, my job is secure. I mean, it used to be that kind of time when these were always the jobs that you never had to worry about either getting laid off or fired or anything like that. I mean, of course, you get fired for certain mm-hmm. reasons, but laid off more or less and lose your job because of the economy. Mm-hmm. We're at a different time right now, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this economic crisis has really put a strain on city budgets, and they've been able to have to find any way to be able to balance their budgets. Like we said earlier, whether it's through furloughs or through staff reductions or through hiring freezes, because of the way that, like we were saying, that the tax revenue is sort of deferred, it's going to be a couple years until things really start getting better in cities.
With that being the case, and these individuals losing their jobs, and some of them are very, you know, technical jobs and everything else, where should they be looking? Are they going to be turning towards the federal government? I mean, are we seeing that the federal government is still hiring, so these people have maybe a direct role because they may have been working with federal agencies on maybe various issues? Where should they be going?
Yeah, I mean, even though some people have read in the news that there was a kind of a couple months ago when the census was finishing up, there was a big layoff of federal jobs, and those were temporary positions to begin with. So overall, the federal government is still experiencing hiring growth. And last year, the Partnership for Public Service released a study that suggested that over 600,000 new jobs in the federal government were projected to be starting by the year 2012. I don't know how much of these people that are losing their jobs at the state and local level are going to be moving over to federal government. But I'm sure that if for those that meet those technical skills, they definitely will. For other people, I mean, they're going to be entering the private sector job market and looking to be able to find a job in a really competitive market right now. I know where I read the study, but sort of the common wisdom right now is that there's about 5 job seekers for every job opening right now in the United States. Yeah. So it's a really competitive market.
I could imagine. Now, I know I talked to some people on the HR level that even on the federal side, we're seeing 200 to 400, even at the higher levels for maybe a GS-14 or the high levels of government, 14, 15, they're seeing about 200 to 400 per job announcement come up in terms of applicants. And so it is very competitive.
Yeah. And one of the things that when Monster Government Solutions, the organization that GovCentral works with at Monster, because we're both part of the same parent organization, they did a study where they surveyed federal HR managers about what the sort of, you know, the deal is right now, much similar to what you talked about. And one of their biggest frustrations was that there were a lot of just seriously underqualified candidates, people that were straight out of college applying for a senior executive service position that they were severely underqualified for. And if I was to give any advice to people that are wanting to have a career in public services, really, you know, evaluate what you want to do and what skills you have appropriate for the position. You're just going to be frustrating yourself by applying for a job you know that you're not going to get, and you're going to be adding a piece of paperwork for someone that isn't going to hire you. That isn't to say you shouldn't apply yourself and stretch for a position, but if you know you're severely underqualified for it, you know, there are definitely a lot of positions that you are qualified for.
You know, you kind of good segue, because I wanted to kind of get into some advice, because GovCentral is kind of a community site, and where, you know, you have people on there providing advice. Talk to us about what GovCentral is providing in terms of the federal jobs or the government job seeker.
Yeah, one of the big things that we suspended briefly over the summer but are restarting is our government jobs report. And what we look at is sort of the state of government hiring across the federal, state, and local level, what the overall trends are for that. Like right now, at the state and local level, it's not great, but at the federal level, it's not as bad as that. So people are still hiring at the federal level. We also are doing career profiles of jobs that that you might be interested in learning more about what those people do day to day and what skills you need to be successful at that position. Right. And we're also really big advocates for being able to receive continued education and training. That's going to be your best way of ensuring a spot in a very competitive job market. Whether that means that if you have a college degree, you might want to get a master's in something, or if you have a master's, you might want to get a doctorate. But even if you don't have a college degree, getting those technical certificates are great ways to be able to not only refine your skills, but make you a better candidate for a job.
So this is a time period, if you are possibly laid off from a position and you're kind of thinking, okay, I need to segue into a government agency, you may want to kind of maybe get a list of agencies and kind of think about, well, what agencies do I want to get into and what kind of positions, and then begin getting into an educational program, an academic program that's going to kind of get you to where you want to go.
Yeah, and that doesn't, I mean, and the biggest thing is just stay active. It's, I mean, I've experienced when I was just starting my career of being in between jobs. I, you know, had internships on somewhere, and the internship ended, and I didn't have another thing lined up. So you can just get like kind of self-defeating and mad at yourself for not finding something. And the best part is just staying active. If you're not finding a job that, if you're not finding the job market favorable to you, you know, maybe you want to take a slightly less paying job, but get an internship somewhere, volunteer at an organization that you like, whether it's a church, a civic organization, being a guide at a museum, something like that. Just staying active. And those are also ways that you can network and get out there and meet these people that might connect you to your next job.
You know, you made a good point about volunteer service, because I talk to people all the time when I get a chance. And the government, when they're looking at an application, it doesn't really matter what kind of the experience came from. It can be volunteer service, internship. It could be a full-time position. All they want to know is that you had the experience. If you look at OF-612, it says either, you know, and I talk to people about this all the time. I'm glad you mentioned this, is that it asks for relevant experience, paid or unpaid.
Absolutely.
So you're saying that don't just kind of sit down and be idle.
Mm-hmm.
Get out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't matter where you get the experience. It's just that you get it. So if you're looking to make a career change in a place that you don't have any work experience for, it, start volunteering. And that's credible experience that you can put on your resume. Absolutely.
Would you recommend, and you know, we've got a lot of professional job seekers out there. I mean, people who are professionals, I should say, mm-hmm. who've been in their careers for a period of time. They've far removed from, you know, college and everything else. They're out there. They're unemployed. Would you even say that internships and volunteering is good for them?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I'm young. I'm under 30. So I don't feel qualified to give advice to people
sure.
that are much more experienced than I do. But I know that, like, one of my favorite books is What Color Is Your Parachute?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great career advice book. And the author of it always talks about just like getting out there and finding your true passion. So for people that are old, that are more experienced in their careers, that are experiencing job loss, they can feel really frustrated. And you know, age discrimination can be a real thing. But those are situations that you can really turn to your advantage by still doing those volunteer positions, finding those civic organizations and local community groups that you can be a part of. And one of the things is that that this person's been working longer, they can provide a much larger wealth of experience and just sort of common sense than some young, stupid kid straight out of college.
Sure. And Chris said the young, stupid kid.
I didn't really mean it.
I know, I'm just joking. But in that, you know, we got the social networking. A lot of agencies are using Twitter. A lot of agencies are now starting to do more social networking. You know, you're part of the movement mm-hmm. of social networking that is definitely embracing this. How are you? I know GovCentral has a social networking piece on it. How are you seeing this changing the market? Are you seeing more recruiters using it? Are you seeing people more kind of networking more with it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the social networks, whether it's our social community on GovCentral.com or Facebook or Twitter, LinkedIn, these are all areas that job seekers are finding creative ways to find jobs. There's this great story about this young man that wanted to work in advertising, and he found, like, he had his idol in the advertising industry. And what he did is that he went to Google's AdSense, where you can do advertising on the search results, and he said, "Hire me. whenever you would Google this individual's name, right? So you have a boss that this really important guy in the advertising industry that will occasionally Google his name to see what, you know, what's going on, or if someone's slandering him, or what news story is being written about him. And he would see this ad for this young guy, like, being like, hire me. And he ended up getting a job from this position. So finding creative ways like that, these are also, again, opportunities that you can go join LinkedIn groups or Facebook groups. We have a presence on Facebook as well. And these are ways where people can connect with others and just try to find an introduction and get started.
GovCentral.com is the site. Chris McConnell is the man sitting in the chair who's the editor of GovCentral.com. Chris, thank you so much for kind of giving us some insight on the Sammies and also about this these local cuts that are happening across the nation. We're going to have you back in a month or so to kind of talk about any kind of updates. Anything going on that we need to know about that you're going to be following?
Yeah, one of the big things that just came out yesterday or on Wednesday was that there's going to be some new hiring application systems that are going to be starting in November this year for federal employees. So before there was this dreaded KSA-SA, knowledge, skills, and abilities.
The hiring reform is going to change.
That's right. And they expected to start in November. So they'll be moving to a more resume-based application system. And so that's something that GovCentral is going to be following in the next few months, as well as the economic conditions at the local level. So thank you so much, Derek, for having me on today.
Chris McConnell, he's editor of GovCentral.com. It's a monster community.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED. Your source for federal news now.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday mornings at 10, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Ladies and gentlemen, your government is looking for brave people willing to step up and transform government empowered by technology. Will you help your agency be more productive? Will you be ready to virtualize data centers and maximize efficiency within your government agency? Do you have what it takes to get compliant with the U.S. Government Configuration Baseline Initiative focusing on security? Heroes are wanted. Microsoft has the tools to help you be that hero. Go to Microsoft.com/GovITHero to apply.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem. The answer? Constant hacking. Every day, thousands of cyber attackers try to access federal networks. With Quest Security Solutions, you can keep the out and your data protected. To learn more about Quest Security Solutions, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
Today's Emergency Preparedness Series is brought to you by the D.C. Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency.
You may be prepared for an emergency, but what about your kids? Now's the time to find out before disaster strikes. Take time to teach your kids how to dial 911. Do they know your cell phone and their home address? And be prepared for all types of disasters, not just the most common. For instance, if there's a biological or chemical hazard, don't head for the basement. Many chemicals are heavier than air and will seep into your basement.
Did you know that floods are the number one natural disaster in America? The D.C. Homeland Security and Emergency Management Agency wants to help you prepare now for the flood risks that come with hurricanes, tropical storms, and other severe summer weather. Learn the difference between a flood watch and a flood warning. Gather supplies for your storm kit and create a family emergency plan. To learn more about preparing for floods, including information on flood insurance, visit 72hours.dc.gov. Be ready, D.C.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWD